was upstairs when I heard about the whole affair. I said, whoa, no, William and Mary won't do now. Well, I did not think the girl could be so rude. And I'm never going back to my old school.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM, 100.5 FM. My Old School, that's our theme music for our guest. Please welcome Dr. Melick Corey. He's president of Unity College. Welcome to the show, Dr. Corey.
Thank you for having me.
Have you been introduced with theme music before?
No, this is my first time. I feel privileged.
Yes, everyone should have theme music, I believe. So Unity College is doing some really exciting things, a strong focus on sustainability. I think that may be part of your academic and certainly part of your niche in terms of the facilities up there. But before we talk about that, let's talk a little bit about your background. I'm always fascinated in terms of guests, how they really get to where literally and figuratively they are, how you got to Maine, and then how you your success in academics and your commitment to academics. So where'd you grow up, go to school, and then we'll talk about how you got to Maine, and then we'll talk about Unity College.
Sure. Boy, that's going to take a while.
We have a while here. We've got hours and hours.
No, actually, I was born in a small country in West Africa.
Right.
And I grew up with, basically going to primary school like everyone else. But I worked in West Africa for a while and immigrated to the States when I was a young man. I worked up at the University of Maine at Fort Kent, where I got my bachelor's degree there. Got my master's from the University of Maine at Orono.
Did you first choose coming to Maine? From West Africa, did the Chamber of Commerce reach out? It's not a typical migration pattern.
Do you want to hear the official story?
Or I would love hear to hear
the this, unofficial story.
The official story. Here at Tide Smart Talk, we go official all the way.
Okay. I tell you, it's really strange. My father used to run a very successful restaurant in West Africa in which most of our clients were Americans. And as part of that exchange, we used to get video cassettes of MASH.
Really?
Yes. And my father and I, after the restaurant would close, would watch episodes of MASH religiously and fell in love with Hawkeye Pierce and Crabapple Cove.
Alan Alda, Hawkeye Pierce,
exactly.
Crabapple Cove.
And so as I grew up, I got this affinity for Maine. I researched Maine, and because of this TV show of this gentleman and his basically passion for Crabapple Cove and his father.
So was that where Crabapple Cove? I didn't even know that. I was a fan of MASH growing up. But
yes.
Is that where Hawkeye was from, Maine?
His father was in Crabapple Cove, yes. And so it's a fake town, of course, but
sure.
Back then in West Africa, I didn't know that. And so when it came time to look for college and immigrate, Maine just became a natural choice, no pun intended. And, 20 years later, I'm a president of America's Environmental College right here in Maine, thanks in part to Alan Alda, Hawkeye Pierce, and MASH.
Wow. Yeah, what a great show that was, because, when it first came out, obviously it's tough to do what in effect was a comedy.
Yep.
About a subject as inherently, I guess, sad or serious in that case, mm-hmm. The Korean War.
Absolutely.
But it was so well written and the characters were so well defined,
mm-hmm.
that, I think it's one of probably the top five iconic shows ever.
Absolutely.
Radar O'Reilly.
Of course.
And then there were always like Honeycutt and then the other guy and then Frank. Frank Burns and then Hot Lips Houlihan.
They were all great characters, absolutely.
And so as a young man, from watching them, it's uh-huh. funny how entertainment can kind of permeate cross-cultural communication. You related to it in some way, and then...
Absolutely. It was a great show for my father and I to watch. And, of course, Hawkeye used to write letters to his father from away. So it really became a touching thing that my father and I did. But I tell you, it's not that strange, because about 15 years later...
Right.
I am working at a university in Iowa, and I'm having dinner with international students, because my wife always tells me that this is a really crazy story and it's unique. To show you how ununique it is and how some of this culture permeates, we're having dinner with international students. And I'm asking them where they're all from. And this young Japanese man says to me, you know, he came from Japan. And I was like, why Iowa? And he goes, that's the home of Captain Kirk. And I'm like, oh my God, because Captain Kirk from Star Trek grew up in Kansas, I mean, in Iowa. So it's really interesting to see how some of these shows really permeate and make young adults all over the world have this dream of coming to school in America.
That's really fascinating. It'll be interesting to see in modern pop culture if that influence is the same, because back 20, 30 years ago, there were only three networks. And so there was more commonality. So MASH, I think the final episode of MASH was the most viewed TV show.
Yes.
Because it was much more concentration. Mm-hmm. And now with cable and satellite, things are very fragmented. But so I don't know if we have some of the same powerful, iconic characters as Kirk or Hawkeye, because, you know, there's so many different shows.
Well, that's true. But also with the, you know, the birth of the internet, there is a lot more access to what it is to be America and what it is to be across the world these days.
Wow. So with that, talk a little bit about your trajectory in terms of going to school and then, you know, your pathway from teaching or academics to administration. And then we'll talk about your role up at Unity College here in Maine.
Sure, absolutely. I think, you know, I came into higher education at a time when the shift in basically what it means to be a small college in the United States was going through an interesting, I would say, quiet revolution. And so in my mind, when I started working for the University of Maine at Fort Kent, they were looking at how to be distinctive. They were just having those conversations in the mid-90s about how do you become financially sustainable. And so I basically was one of those individuals who came as a non-traditional student and had business background. And I got to basically meet some of the folks at the college and got a job there, originally working in odd jobs all over the college to try to help them as they reinvent this. I worked in admissions. I worked in the athletics department. I taught and really got a really unique perspective of all of the different areas within the university that I would not have normally gotten if I had come to a normal trajectory of just one of the silos.
Right.
Back then, one of my titles was enrollment management liaison. And then I became a business faculty member. Then I became a soccer coach. Then I became I worked in PR. Then I worked for the admissions office. So I basically had by sheer luck, exposure to all of these different areas. So I got an appreciation of how to integrate all of these different silos in a world where higher education was becoming more and more kind of trying to find its own, of course, with the growth of the community colleges, the for-profit schools.
Online, digital is becoming a big...
So a lot of these institutions were built on a model that basically we were the arbiter of knowledge. You came to our school. The concept of marketing, the concept of value proposition, the very concept of customer service was almost, you know, there was an inherent belief that kids are going to come and learn and we're going to bestow our knowledge. So with technology, with the federal government and aid kind of rescinding a little bit every year, with folks trying to figure out the blur between the community college, the for-profits, the state schools, the research ones, the big endowment schools, the small privates, they really became an identity crisis. And I was lucky enough to basically have jobs where I was working either for a president or a president's number two to try to figure out how the institutions I worked at were going to navigate that changing tide. So one of the things I'm very proud of in my career is until I became the president of Unity College, I've never actually had titles that existed prior to me being hired. I was always the first person to have that title, whether it's enrollment management, whether it's marketing, as a way of institutions to try to figure out their place in the higher education landscape.
Interesting. We have Dr. Amelik Khoury. He is the recently appointed, he was with Unity College in different roles in leadership, but he was recently appointed officially as president of Unity College, right?
Yes.
One thing in your background I thought was unique is receiving a doctorate from University of Phoenix.
Yes.
And that's primarily an online platform, educational platform?
Yes. The doctorate model that they had was a hybrid model where you do most of your courses online and you go to annual residencies, yes.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit because, as you mentioned earlier, the paradigm of education is shifting, whereas historically over the, you know, in terms of organized secondary education over the last couple of centuries, it has to shift both in terms of its framework and curriculum, how teaching technology is impacting things. But the online element, the digital element, is something fascinating, both as a vocational career path where schools have to offer programming that kind of recognizes that reality, but the fact that bricks and mortar, as it's referred to, and here in Maine with our university system, with UMaine and all the different campuses, there are some real challenges in the economics when you're paying for so much infrastructure. You're paying for so much, so many physical elements of buildings and heating systems. And it feels like most universities and most colleges are figuring out the right balance, because I think in-person live education has a lot of social value, a lot of learning value, but we live in an efficient, very digital age. So for you, getting an advanced degree from University of Phoenix, do you think that's more of a trend? And then we'll talk a little bit at Unity if there are programs being offered online or individual teachers putting course load online, and what you see kind of the future between building, you know, traditional education and incorporating digital more.
Absolutely. I think that that concept of online is, in my mind, a very siloistic way of looking at higher education. So, you know, I did my master's in University of Maine Orono, which is a very traditional brick and mortar institution. I did, you're right, my doctorate in online. But I think a lot of us still see online as an independent, different way of doing business. I think that 21st century teaching has to find a way to really integrate the technology that is now available for students, like students at Unity College, to be free to roam around the country while getting a quality education. I think some of the issues with higher education right now, personally, is we try so hard to keep the silos between what is considered brick and mortar versus what is considered online, and everything from the way we accredit to the way we teach, and that if you start to look at the online technology as a way to enhance the student's experience instead of a separate but equal, which we know doesn't work very well in any environment, a way to educate, I think we will free our mind prison of being able to educate our students where they are, but not at the expense of what they need to learn. For example, at Unity College, the hands-on, the experiential. I mean, we are in Maine for a reason. We have three climate zones. We are naturally rich in our resources. So the idea that an online program has to be a void of that hands-on is I think a very, very narrow way of thinking of how higher education thinks. I'll give you an example. If we have a number of students who go with a few, some of our faculty to the coast of Maine to spend a summer doing research, while at the same time having support from campus through an online portal with a faculty member who does English or math, you start to look at the online nothing more than a technology that supports the enhancement of education. It also, of course, has this traditional approach where there are some folks who are landlocked, who are, or more importantly, cannot move to go to a traditional college. But I think that the industry has not really found a way to harness what our faculty does best with the technology as we treat them as separate entities.
Yeah, I think you used a really interesting word there, the industry, because rarely is education looked at. And, you know, I agree with you in that if you don't have strong fundamentals, and whether it's marketing or whether it's infrastructure, the, you know, the purpose, the intrinsic value of education is knowledge in teaching young people, older, you know, teaching the process of learning and assimilating information and effectively processing it. But historically, most universities haven't looked at it as an industry. They've looked at it as almost a special calling. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of schools have gotten into trouble in terms of evolving in the economics of education. And there's all kinds of stories about schools running in deficits and closing and those types of things. By the way, you're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM and 100.5 FM. We have Dr. Melick Corey. He is the president of Unity College. Let's talk about Unity College itself. For our listeners that may not be familiar, if you could kind of give a quick overview on where it's located and then the number of students and kind of the physical campus, and then we'll talk about the curriculum and things that you're doing and things that you're known for up there.
Sure. Unity College, known as America's Environmental College, was established in 1965. It is an environmental science college that is undergirded by the liberal arts. What we are known for is a number of majors in the environmental field, ranging from conservation to preservation, everything from conservation law enforcement, adventure therapy, energy management, sustainable agriculture, environmental art and literacy. The idea is that with our faculty adopted 4 years ago, sustainability science, because we are beginning to understand that a theory without application and or application without theory really is a very myopic way to view on preparing adults. At this day and age, there is this argument going on in higher education that says that if you're career-oriented, somehow you're not learning, it's too career-focused, therefore somehow you're missing out on an education. Or if you're getting this education, like you said earlier about the ivory tower, right, somehow you don't have practical skills. What we are trying to do at Unity College as part of our curriculum is really merging this, what we're calling total education, understanding that a student not only has to be career-focused or graduate school prepared, but has to have the underpinnings of a liberal arts education in critical thinking, writing, reading, personal skills. So we adopted sustainability science so we can look at the students holistically so that they're not only prepared for careers, but are well-rounded global citizens. And we're a small school in Waldo County in a small town called Unity, Maine. Our student population is about 700. We basically do not claim to have all the answers, but know that if you are interested in the environment, if you want to talk about the science of the issues today, not necessarily the politics, if you want to do research, if you want to learn what it means to be an environmental steward, then you come to Unity College, whether you're a student, you're an investor, you're a donor, you're a faculty member, and we will work with you because we believe that if we generate the next generation of students who are ready to face the world through systems thinking instead of a very myopic, I would call it one-dimensional view, then we are doing our part on a planet that we recognize has finite resources and we need to stop treating it like it's infinite.
I know. We're hurling through space at 30-something thousand miles per hour. We've got fossil fuels that are depleting. That's basically our gas tank. And I'm with you, Dr. Corey. I don't know if you know this, but here at this campus, we have the most energy-efficient building in New England.
Perfect.
And we just put it online. It's on the other side of the campus. It's called Verdescent. It's the only net positive building in Maine. So it produces three times the energy it uses.
Wow. Well, I would love to have you on my campus because I've got two buildings that I think could compete with that.
I don't know. I've looked at your buildings, and they're excellent, by the way.
Thank you.
But we will go ahead. We will have a battle of the buildings. Our windows come from Lithuania.
Wow.
That's what I'm talking about, and I'm jesting.
So there was no fossil fuels that we use in flying that over then? Or we don't count that?
See, if you're going to drill down that deep,
he has you there.
If you're going to drill down on that deep, yeah.
I'm teasing.
I know. But that's the funny thing about sustainability and building practices because it is such a complex, whether it's the supply chain or I would have preferred to build with all materials close to home. So the outside of the building is poplar from Maine that was kiln dried. The materials, the natural materials came from Maine or as close as possible. But when you build a high-performing, sustainable building of the type we did, and happy to show it to you after the show, we don't manufacture those windows here in the U.S., and which is amazing to me because I think a lot of it is rooted in kind of our history and our sense of economics where most of the windows in both residential and commercial applications are built based on an economic model of here's what we have for the building. We have a 20 or 30 year mortgage. The windows have to kind of last 20 or 30 years. Comparably, you go to Europe And I've spent a lot of time over in Europe, and they play the long game, right? Yes. And so other parts of the world, you know, somewhere along the line, they're like, you know, castles kind of make sense. And and not just in that way, but in you know, in Germany adopting mm-hmm. renewables and sustainable elements much more than other countries, because they see it as being over hundreds and hundreds of years. Here in America, we, you know, in general, we kind of slap things together and say, oh, yeah, I'm not going to be around in 20 or 30 years because we're mobile, we're transient, and it's just bad policy.
I would agree with you, which is why I think that, I mean, I was really just making a joke. Because sure. even at Unity College, we are by no means perfect. What we enjoy about what we're doing with our campus is we are learning with our faculty, our students, and our staff of how to get better.
Right.
And with every piece of research or knowledge that is generated, we like to think that we're getting better and better. We are by no means perfect. But I do agree with you on that sentiment, though. But I would say that part of the problem is our education system, because we don't teach as part of, be it in business, in architecture, yet an ingrained idea of what it means to live in a sustainable world.
Right.
I still think that it's viewed as almost an afterthought or something you add on to your education and not undergird it as the very basically foundation of how you learn. Because if you think about it, if every major, every career in our country in higher education is taught with sustainability science at its core, understanding that our natural resources are finite, with this idea that you cannot be, you cannot think about the environment without thinking about people, and without thinking about people, without thinking about commerce, and really look at these three lenses symbiotically, not one or the other, which one fits your narrative.
Right.
And as long as you make this idea of natural resource management a political issue, we are not getting down to the facts.
Right, but you said earlier, we have Dr. Melik Khoury, he's president of Unity College here in Maine, that Unity focuses on science, not politics.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue, respectfully, that here, you know, our system of government, mm-hmm. everything is rooted in, at some level, relative to policy, politics, government, whether it's local, county, mm-hmm. statewide, federal. And every single thing, and for 9 years, probably one of the most interesting periods I've had in my professional career, I was an adjunct professor at 4 universities, and I would teach from a perspective of, my highest, you know, focus or priority was to try to convey a sense of education isn't about a finite kind of parameter of you go to school for 4 years, you get an advanced degree for 2 years, and people say, oh, yeah, where'd you get your education? I look at it as it's a continuum.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're 18 years old or 80 years old, I want to try to convey or try to, you know, for my own kids, my own 3 kids, it's like, yeah, there are different formal periods of education where you can really immerse yourself in a particular study mm-hmm. or environment, and certainly Unity has it. But if we're not teaching kids the ability to learn themselves
mm-hmm.
or to open their minds mm-hmm. to learning things, and when you mentioned sustainability, politics to me is a big part of it, because when we have 40-something% of Americans that fundamentally don't accept climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have a kind of a political system where here in Maine, a high percentage of young voters and older voters
mm-hmm.
may not know the difference between a referendum and a refrigerator,
mm-hmm.
it's really hard to get across the point you were making earlier, where I believe that climate change is among the top 1 or 2 priorities we have, because civilization and life on Earth depends on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this planet, as you said, with finite resources. Mm-hmm. We're hurling through space. Once we use it up, then, you know, humans have historically shown that they're very adaptive. But people aren't, I don't think, as concerned about it as they should be today, because it's like, well, do we have 20 years of oil reserves? Do we have 60? You know, can we do more fracking? Can we get more energy out of the rocks? Will new technology or chemicals allow us to drain the last drop? But we're not building any more dinosaurs. So we're not changing the the physical makeup of the core of the Earth. So we have to look at one way or another alternative energy, whether it's solar, whether it's tidal, whether it's other forms. But if we can't get people politically aware, then it's really hard, in my opinion, just to kind of put an academic overlay on it.
No, I agree with you. I think that any singular lens to look at anything is, in by definition, not looking at the complete picture. I guess when I talk about politics, I think what really is disappointing this day and age for me personally is that politics is more about being partisan than looking at the issue. I remember a time when, depending on the issue, as an individual, you were able to be, you know, I would say bipartisan, because as an individual, you had the intellect, or at least were allowed to be for something, but not against someone.
Right.
And right now, I think what's happening is there is just a line in the sand. I would love for us to get to a postpartisan approach where the issue at hand is less politicized. And but let me bring it back to education and Unity College for a second, because I started this interview by saying that we are undergirded by the liberal arts. I think that the part of the solution is education. But education also has a responsibility to be relevant with industry and be relevant with government. I think we're getting to the part where everybody is drawing their own little lines. And there are many folks who believe that once students go to college, the idea that at a college or university, what we teach them does not have a direct impact on the industry, or somehow learning to be credentialed has to come at the expense of a well-rounded education, is part of the problem. I think that the education model is broken. And as a result, as long as we are looking at it from a lens of an either-or and not the fact that a good, well-rounded, educated student that also has a specific skill set for the industry that they're going into is a person who can learn, unlearn, and relearn and can bring critical thinking and communication skills, I think that this is a generational issue. I think we owe it as a country, as a world, to look at how we educate our students and prepare them to be global citizens and not just either creators of widgets or theories who have theorists who cannot in any way apply that to the real world. So at Unity College, what I would I say that our faculty, our staff are trying to do is figure out how do we educate these students so it's not an either or. Because if you have somebody who understands solar, who understands sustainable agriculture, who understands basically natural resource management or conservation law, but it's also well-rounded enough to understand their role as a global citizen, read, write, think, have had experiences through internships in industries, then you will be graduating an individual who can think for themselves, who can be a productive member of society, and not this dichotomy of, are you either an intellectual or are you a worker bee?
I agree completely. We have Dr. Melik Khoury. He's president of Unity College, and obviously he's shy with his views, very quiet. I'm kidding, of course. I agree with everything you just said. You know, a week ago, I interviewed a young person interested in an entry-level position, and this young lady had a degree in French museum studies or something like that, and it was kind of esoteric. And for the last 3 or 4 years, she hasn't really had traction in her career, and she's worked jobs that she felt as though were more in the service industry. And she was openly frustrated and said, I want to work in a professional environment. I want to do this and that. And I was just kind of curious. I said, well, why did you pick French lit museum studies? And so I really liked it. And I said, well, that's excellent. There's a lot of things I like also. But did you enter college with either the expectation or the goal that you are going to college to learn things, to have diverse experiences, but also set part of your foundation for work, for income, for vocation? And she was kind of removed from that. She was kind of insulated from the idea that one was connected to the other. And I do think you need to have both. And I do think having a worldview, having a view of history, so it can inform your perspective in the context of today. And when we have people that are very, very myopic in either a technical study, or on the other side, they're very philosophical and abstract, I don't think that serves most real-world applications that we have these days in 2016 and beyond.
Well, let me tell you a little bit of a story where I think higher education is also a little bit culpable, because I think that there is this idea in higher education that sometimes we are above it all. While our job is to, one, educate our society, produce leaders, and also produce folks who are technically able to adapt with the times.
But is the structure the fault of that? Because I agree with you. And I think historically there's this image of kind of the tweed coat and the pipe and walking through the quad at most universities, where there is this kind of the superior intellectual higher calling part of education, and there's an intersection of the history of mm-hmm. education, but also kind of the current structure and tenure is part of that. Mm-hmm. And so what is the cause, do you think, and how do we break out of the cause and get more people thinking, which I agree with almost everything you've mm-hmm. said today in terms of making it practical, making it relevant, and not doing one or the other.
Sure.
But part of it is many people, and I don't want to single out professors, but many people in the front lines of academia really like that sense of I'm coming in for a lecture and I'm going to impart this wisdom and you're going to remember it and then I'm going to test you on it and then I'm going to do grades and then I'm going to go to the teacher's lounge and then I'm going to mm-hmm. read a book and then once every year I'm going to write a paper and it's going to be published. And as opposed to faculty members themselves having experience or having a root system connected to the real world as opposed to just the path of education or academia. And it feels like with your background in business and what you've been saying, you're very much different. So how does that change?
Absolutely. I think to answer this question, I've got to go back a little bit.
And you don't want to offend any of your professors because they'll be listening. They'll be saying, oh, Dr. Corey, what are you talking about? You know, I like the tweed jacket and the pipe and kind of the philosophical, you know, esoteric part of academics.
I would challenge the notion of that at Unity College because I think my faculty and my staff are completely and utterly dedicated to making sure that we not only distribute knowledge, but also generate it. And almost, I won't say almost, everyone who works at Unity College, whether they, regardless of their perspective on the environment, are there for the cause. So I think we are lucky in that sense. And we are young enough not to have some of that baggage, but we're also young enough where we're making our own mistakes. But to answer your question about the ivory tower and all of that, I think that had its time and place, to be fair. But that was at a time when only the elite went to college. With the creation of the GI Bill, and really opening the concept, just like we are, that everybody deserves an education. The model that existed back then, where only 1-5% of our population really went to college, and most of them did not have to worry about paying for it. Right. And because of that small population, government could fund a lot of that, and there were huge endowments that paid for that. The business model of higher education was very, very different. You all of a sudden decide that everybody deserves an education, but you never actually change the model. Then because it's an education facility, you put folks in charge who have absolutely no idea how to build an infrastructure. You start to reduce the funding. Most of these schools don't have large endowments. What you've created is an industry that is a little bit out of touch with modern day and the needs of our society. You then add the complexity of all of a sudden, come 20 years ago, you start telling these institutions that there isn't enough resources. When then all of a sudden, and the faculty are not trained in resource management as far as business goes, infrastructure. They made the best decisions they can. All of a sudden, you are looking at an environment where the business model is broken, but you can't use the word business because then you are sullying the
you called it an industry earlier. Now you're calling it business. This is revolutionary.
Well, but I think that the words business and industry is also used to vilify what I'm trying to say. The very concept of business means people are coming to your institution.
Right.
They want an experience.
And it is an enterprise.
Yes. They want an education. They want us to prepare them to be productive members of society. There is an exchange there. Their trust, their money, their financial aid, their investment for our ability to prepare them to be productive members of society, be it as intellectuals, be it as folks in the fields and the like. But the model was built around a small number of colleges that had huge endowments. A lot of these institutions, in my mind, are not as relevant as they need to be. So then you come into a really complex matter of what you said earlier about today, people not voting, not understanding the difference between a referendum and the like. As resources started to get tight, the very thing that made the United States higher education special, which is the liberal arts, which meant that any student, regardless of what they want to do in their career, had to have a grounded understanding of certain tenets that makes them a productive member of society, started to get eroded away as we looked at credentialing versus education,
right,
because the model was broken. And we, as an as higher education, we became defensive. We slowly but surely are becoming a little bit irrelevant to industry, and we need to be more relevant. We need to stop teaching not only what we believe we can, but work with government, work with industry, and really prepare this either-or. Because here's my fear. If industry takes on education and we go back to apprenticeship, then we get the skills but not the knowledge.
Right.
Yeah, but so education has to reinvent itself. I make a very unpopular argument where I haven't had the time to research this yet, but I posit that we as higher education eroded away the credibility of the very liberal arts that every graduate needs, because as resources got tight, we started to internally compete between my discipline and another discipline. A mistake where if you are, you're basically beginning to say one discipline had more importance than the other one, instead of saying that they need to be well-rounded. And so it, so now, 50 years later, those very students who our own industry said to them, just take those courses so you can get to your major, they have kids, and now they have this mind prison that somehow that liberal arts is not as valuable as it is today. So what we've done is we've tarnished the concept of liberal arts as an elite, idealistic, out-of-touch approach, when in reality, the intent of the liberal arts and sciences was to create a well-rounded, grounding platform for all students, regardless of their discipline, because it's okay to be the best technology person, the best research person in the world. But if you are grounded with knowing how to think, how to read, how to write, exposed to other cultures, culturally competent, math, statistics, then you add value than just simply turn a wrench or write a paper. So I think as an industry, we need to get past ourselves a little bit, but also government and industry need to all of us get together and say, we have an ethical obligation to prepare 21st century global citizen in the environmental economy, because now we know that our planet is a finite resource.
Right.
And we need to both educate and credential them so that 50 years from now, we understand how to be symbiotic both with this planet, commerce, and people. So for me, I think the time has passed where we all get to sit in our ivory towers, in our silos, and make the conversation that the other person is wrong or the other group is lesser, and say, how do we fight for the very survival of a species that needs to understand that the way we live today, politically and socially and environmentally, has to fundamentally change to adapt to a new way of thinking?
Agreed. We have Dr. Melick Corey, president of Unity College here in Maine. It feels like Unity has such a clear, and I think this is great, I'm not referring to the college as a brand or as a business enterprise, but as an academic institution. But from everything I've read, it feels like there's very clear focus on your mission as the nation's premier environmental college, as being active in both research and the academic side of sustainability. So it's a clear focus. Where, both in terms of your current makeup of students and faculty and in the future, is the audience for that? And being in Maine, I think, is kind of a natural habitat for an environmental college. I think one of our businesses here called Veridescence focuses on sustainability, because being in Maine as a business, I think there's a real future and there's real economics and renewable energy and sustainability. But how much of your audience, or how much of the universe of potential students, are in Maine, or have you seen a trend outside of Maine, outside of the region, where potential students find Unity College from other parts of the country or internationally and say, yeah, that's the place I want to go. And is that shifting? And do you think there'll be a significant shift in the next few years?
Absolutely. It's been shifting for the last 10 with Unity College because of our clear mission, because of our differentiation, because of our unique brand of education that really ties in this experiential with the practical application, with the theory and research behind it. We are currently attracting a significant number of students from all over the country. Basically, we've got, I think, 35 states currently represented. Almost 67% of our students are out of state. Students from in-state who want this brand of education are getting it. And because, like I said earlier, with Maine having three climate zones and being very rich in natural resources, I mean, if you think about where Unity College is situated physically, we are literally in the middle of everywhere. We are half an hour from the ocean. We are about an hour from the Moosehead Lake region, which is unbelievable conservation and lake. We are an hour and a half from Portland. We are 3 hours from Boston. So you have this urban, this rural, this northern Maine woods, ocean, all of the things that allow a student who wants to understand the human being's interaction with nature right in Maine. You know as well as I, if you are outside on the 95 or Route 1 in the summer, people from all over the country are coming to Maine because it is vacation land. We are saying it's not that much of a stretch that any student in the country or the world that wants to learn what it means to be an environmental steward, regardless of the occupation, could have Maine be its classroom. So we are committed to Maine being our classroom. We've got students as part of our orientation that go to all corners of Maine to experience what it means to live in an environment, whether it's urban or rural. It's a microcosm of what we hope the entire planet will be someday. So we've got students from all over the country coming. You know, I make this joke on campus, and I'm now beginning to take myself maybe a little too seriously, that I would love to transition Maine from being just vacation land to education land. Because if you look at even some of the companies in Maine, like L.L. Bean, the University of Maine system, our state government, other industry, if we could all collectively start to look at ourselves as a competitive advantage because of our environment, we should be winning the battle for any student in the country that wants to study the environmental sciences instead of looking at it from a very siloistic or independent view and not leveraging this beautiful state.
Right.
So Unity is doing its part. We have almost 70% from out of state. I think we're just scratching the surface.
And the market's moving towards you. You know, inevitably, the issue of renewable electric vehicles, sustainability, other energy sources, it's not going away, right?
Yes, and imagine if Unity College gets to partner with different regions in Maine, like the Moosehead Lake region, Pineland in Brunswick, the northern Maine woods, I said earlier, L.L. Bean, heck, Lowe's, whatever, the timber industry, and
sure,
really created the state of Maine as a living, breathing classroom where faculty don't only teach, but do, that students don't only learn, but experience. That is what the faculty and staff at Unity College is trying to manifest within this curriculum. And so I would say, I would also challenge some of these organizations out there that where we look at each other as competition, that we could look at Maine as a brand for 21st century global education when it comes to the natural resource management.
I agree. We have Dr. Melik Khoury here. I mentioned earlier I was an adjunct professor. I wanted to share something with you and get your thoughts, and this doesn't apply to your curriculum at Unity College. Many years ago, I was a sports agent. I ran sports events, and early on, I spoke at universities down in the South where I was living, and at one point, I was invited to become an adjunct professor at University of South Carolina, and then Georgia State, Clark Atlanta, and then a couple other universities. Very rewarding, very fulfilling. But something happened 20 years ago where everyone got interested in sports business, sports management. Jerry Maguire movie came out. People become pop culture. Everyone's watching ESPN. Mm-hmm. And I got really turned off to that particular curriculum set, because at different universities it's called sport administration, sports business, sports management. There's undergrad programs, graduate programs. UMass was one of the first to really launch it. And most recently, when I looked at the academic industry of sports business, universities and college graduate about 30,000 young people every year with degrees in sports business. The reality is there's only a couple of thousand, like literally 2,000 new jobs every year in sports business. If you take out hospitality or manufacturing and just look at professional service jobs. And I've talked to academic leaders, and they've basically said, well, we've added a sports program because it's a magnet to get a certain group of students. It becomes, not because the market demands it, but because young people at home are saying, well, I'm going to go to college. This school has a sports business program. There's a very tiny marketplace for those students. And what I've tried to teach, you know, when I'm invited to schools, and I've gotten invited less and less because of what I'm saying kind of goes counter to their mission in this area. They say, if you want to be in sports business, that's fine. If you're a fan of sports, whatever, but the core elements are business. And I do this exercise where I say to a room of undergrads, what do you want to do in sports business? I want to be a general manager. I want to be an agent. I want to run the Olympics. And then what skills do you think go into that job? And it's math. It's understanding of contracts. You don't have to be a lawyer, but you have to understand contractual structure. It's sales. It's communications. It's media. And I said, well, see, nowhere there is it being a fan. So if you really want to succeed vocationally, get the building blocks. In 5 or 10 years into your career, if you want to apply that foundation to a sports role, it's much easier to bridge over professionally than try to come up through a pyramid where there's not really much attrition, there's no real growth, and it's a young industry, so not everyone is retiring like in the publishing business. And I see that in other areas of curriculum with big schools. And I think it's to what you were saying before, where the economics have changed, so a lot of universities and colleges are scared. What are we going to do? We need to get another 500 students. Let's add a sports program or an entertainment or a hip-hop music thing. And the marketplace isn't there. Has that been any of your experience? Because you've worked in a number of universities. Or, you know, how do we get academic institutions more focused on the real opportunities and the real economics as opposed to things like, you know, just sports business for the sake of sports business?
I agree with you. I think that any institution that makes decisions like that for a fad is just, it's like, forget higher ed. Even a regular business is doomed to fail. I think higher ed, like I said, it was designed to be a place where, you know, demand exceeded supply. Right. And our entire structure was built around people who want to come and learn. And we own the knowledge. You know, all the knowledge in the world now exists on my iPhone.
Right.
So really, I think... I know it's unpopular to say this, but the business model has to change. We've got to understand that our society needs a fundamental building block. We call it the liberal arts and sciences that has to be with all students. But if you think about how we fund education these days, it's a little bit tricky. There's a blur between what it means to be a Research One school versus what it means to be a private school, what it means to be not-for-profit, what it means to be community college. When I hear community colleges are now giving... four-year degrees, and I hear community colleges are having res halls. I hear state schools, four-year schools are offering associate's degrees. You're right. It is that rush due to a lack of systems thinking about what is education for us as a society? How is it funded? What is its role? How do each of these different educational enterprises support the economy and support the population base? Who should go where and how? Of course, you never want to typecast. Everybody should have the opportunity for education. But what's beginning to happen is it's becoming about cost. And unfortunately, what we are seeing as a society is how much value do we put on an educated society versus a credentialed society. So I would agree with you that the model has to change. It also, I think, is compounded by the old adage that those who can't do teach. It's time to change that because some of the best practitioners in the world are great teachers. And so the idea that a faculty member is somehow not able to run an enterprise is crazy. So at Unity College, for example, we own a farm. We are trying to emulate a way for our sustainable agriculture program to give access for students to work, to give students the ability to research. But at the same time, that is a farm that is producing and supplying vegetables and many other products to the local community and the institution.
We're building a greenhouse to do the same thing. Small world.
Exactly. Right. So we need to get past of this siloistic thinking and get into real integration across industries. We need to really define as a nation what is higher education. Because for me personally, having had the background of growing up in West Africa, the entire world looks at the United States as that wonderful place to get an education. We need to make sure we don't lose that as we become irrelevant. I see China, I see Russia, I see the Middle East, I see Europe trying to emulate the very liberal arts education that we take for granted. We are a real powerhouse in higher education. We need to make sure it does not get eroded away due to politics, funding, or just a lack of understanding that an uneducated society is a society that is doomed for mediocrity.
I agree. But the thing you said just a minute ago, becoming more of an educated society versus credentialed, I think is so critical. Even how we transmit or validate academic credentials, even how resumes are structured, even how I interview people all the time and I got a 4.0 or a 3.8, it's frustrating as an employer and as somebody who was involved in education for years that it's not the symbolism of how it's structured. It's the thinking of when individuals look at the credentialing as being something other than representative or symbolic, but something in itself. And it's not. And so whatever a young person's resume says or doesn't say, it's an indicator. It can show consistency. It can show success and aptitude in certain areas. But in itself, the value doesn't exist in those representative elements. Because if you hire somebody, day one when they're starting to work, you can reset all of that. And the value is what they contribute, what they know, what their abilities are. And we get so hung up on the credentialing thing, both academically and personally. What kind of car do you have? Where do you live? What's the education? And as within the global economy, in the digital world, things are happening so fast that it's all performance-based. And the longer we hang on to, oh, you went to this school, that may be nice for conversation. But at the end of the day, it's about performance, it's about ability, it's about a wide range of things, and the credentialed elements go away very, very fast.
No, I agree with you. I think it's something we are all struggling with because, you know, sometimes when you are looking at how to educate a student, you start to have to do these kind of quality conversations about what does a student need to learn.
Right.
And I think that is fundamentally part of the issue. When you start to look at things purely from a cost management perspective, you start to erode away at the soft sciences. You start to erode away at the very things that make a person the well-rounded individual that you were talking about. So I think we really need to look at this because at Unity College, for example, you know, we are struggling with the conversation of what does a 21st century individual, regardless of their major, need to know to be a productive member of society. And so as a result, we have the environmental lens on that as a little bit stronger than the rest because we're an environmental science school. But the idea, we understand that our students are going to, even if they go to grad school, not everybody's going to be a professor, right?
Right.
They're going to get jobs, whether it's with the federal government, the state government, entrepreneurs. So they need to understand cultural competency. So I think that part of the issue is we need to get beyond just what we want to teach to how do we create resilient adults. Because one of the things that I see every day is these students are coming, even the ones that are very book smart, their ability to interact in the global economy is something that we cannot afford to get wrong.
Even communication skills, interpersonal skills.
Exactly.
And that's my wife and I have three kids and it we see it every day and try to speak to it. But the reliance on digital communication mm-hmm. versus interpersonal communication, the difference between you know, tweeting or texting something, you know, it doesn't lend itself to empathetic connection. It doesn't lend itself to the nuance of human interactions, which are ultimately the most powerful interactions. And we only have another minute or so. We'll have to have you back for another 5 hours. We have Dr. Millick, Peter Corey here. He is president of Unity College here in Maine. For students looking at options and looking at Unity College, you know, without it being all about ROI or economics, where, both currently and in the future, do you see the pathway for students graduating from Unity in terms of sustainability science, in terms of environmental? And because many students are looking at, they want a well-rounded education, but I believe in the next 10 years, the business of sustainability, the business of renewable energy will be a huge industry. And I think Unity is well-placed, but where do you see those opportunities and where have you seen recently for graduating students?
Absolutely. I mean, we have students from out of state that come to Unity College and also end up working at Unity. For example, we've got students right now alums who work at Revision Energy right here in Portland. So the green economy, if you will, is slowly becoming the economy because, you know, sustainability is not a fad. The idea of understanding that our resources are finite is no longer in question. We might argue the language, climate change, global warming, whatever. But the reality is even the largest organizations in the world understand that. So our students who come to Unity College, many of them, they do a little bit of entrepreneurship after they graduate. They do their own guide work right here in Maine and across the country. Some work for the state government as well. So we feed a lot into local and state government. A lot go into sustainable agriculture, whether they're working for a local farm or starting their own farm. But basically, with us, what we promise our students is that we will promise them that they, when they graduate from Unity College, now this is going to sound like a cliche, but it is something that I believe in strongly. We are graduating, what I said at our convocation, guardians of our resources. We only have one planet. So the major, as important as it is for those who are in captive wildlife care and education or in environmental literacy, they will graduate with Unity College not only being subject matter experts in their field and ready to get a job, but a good understanding of environmental issues, a good understanding of the building blocks that they need to have both the resilience and the cultural competency in order to survive in a global environment. So for us, our placement rate right now into a student's area is about 92%. We have the largest environmental career fair at Unity College in Maine. Now, that's if you think about that we are not that large an institution.
A 700-student institution, that's huge.
Because right now there are too many industries and there are too many, I would say, traditionalists in higher education that still think that the environmental sciences and sustainability and how we steward this planet is somehow a separate conversation than an integral transdisciplinary approach to whatever it is that we are studying. Because at the end of the day, I mean, go to Asia, go to Africa. The way that we are stewarding the natural resources there through everything from the IMF through loopholes in the system, because we only know one way of doing business, which is get as much as you can, and it's unsustainable. We are actually looking at Unity College as how our students not only are going to go into these state and federal jobs, but go into corporations, go into foundations, go into companies so that they can, from within, help
manage
their resources.
I would look at it, too, where it's not an appendage, an economic appendage, but it's skeletal. It is central to every organization, to every government, to every enterprise, because it's the base and the foundation of our very existence, without getting too Star Trek about it.
Absolutely. And I will end by saying this. You know, the traditional higher education has the liberal arts core. Then it has the skill set that you need for your major or discipline. And what we are saying is there's another lens that envelops all that, which is understanding natural resources through the lens of sustainability science, which is basically looking at everything through the human, the economic, and the environmental issues. I would challenge any organization, any company in Maine right now to talk to us and say, help us redefine what it means to graduate the kind of students that have the skill sets to feed their into their organization. I would love to build a model where it's not an either or. I would love to build a model where it's not those who can't do teach.
Right.
I would love to build a model where this, by the time the students graduate, the industry that they need to support are well-versed and get the employee base that they need to go into and start changing this ocean, if you will, of lack of systems thinking that forces us to train and retrain. I am really getting frustrated that because we are an America's environmental college and we believe in environmental sciences, that somehow we have to be dubbed as fringe. We are the future mainstream. So work with us, because if you do not understand how to be symbiotic with your natural resources, I don't care if you manufacture widgets. I don't care if you're a technology company. Where do technology companies get their materials from? The earth. So we've got to stop thinking that environmental science schools, which, by the way, are sometimes confused with environmental schools, environmental studies schools. No, we are based on the research and the science, is somehow an add-on or a fringe from the very fabric of how our economy is going to work over the next 100 years. Or we can let nature take care of itself, which I think would be which would be sad, because I think we can live symbiotically with our planet and with each other.
I agree, and you're certainly a passionate, thoughtful, very informed advocate for unity and for this issue. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, sir.
And I'd love to have you come back.
Anytime. I think I have the value added to being the president of America's Environmental College. I was not in the environmental sciences.
Right.
But I grew up in an area where our natural resources were a little bit abused. So being able to be the president of a college that can create access, that can create partnerships, that can allow for us to maybe avoid those kinds of atrocities in the future because we are a better educated society ethically, morally, and scientifically, is why I go to work every day.
Well, and it's why I am wishing you the best up at Unity College and your students and faculty. I think you're doing great work, and love to work with you in some way with what we're doing with sustainability here. So we'll have that conversation at a later time.
Excellent. Looking forward to it.
We've had Dr. Melick Peter Corey. He's president of Unity College up in Unity, Maine. Their website is unity.edu. They're also available on Facebook. If you have any interest in the subject, and I would suggest that we all have an interest in this subject, please go to their website. They're doing interesting work, and there may be some way to either help, or you may have a family friend or relative that is interested in this area, and Unity is certainly doing some great work. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM, 100.5. We'll be back next week.